Designing the perfect SaaS business is so hard. Today, I'm joined by Christopher Gimmer, and we talk about his path and his search to double down on what he's done with Snappa in building the perfect and designing the perfect SaaS business. Really interesting conversation with Christopher as he talks through the things he considered, a bunch of ideas he threw away, considering SaaS or something else entirely, and what, how and what he really zeroed in on as the next big opportunity for him. If you're considering getting into SaaS or considering how to kind of pivot your business to achieve that kind of ideal business model, I think you'll really enjoy this conversation with Christopher Gimmer. Christopher, I think one of the things I struggle with a lot with just like my own image, you know, like the way I perceive myself is that a founder is only successful if they've had an exit and then they go on and do something else. But like today, I want to talk about another path, which like, frankly, I might be exploring, and I think you are, which is like, you don't have to exit your existing business to then have more at bats, right? You can layer on top of each other. And I think that's what you're doing, right? Snappa is a successful established SaaS business, and you're doing something else now, which I definitely wanted to jump into. But like, I think it's a fair point to start at, which is like, you see a lot of people like build it up, sell it, and then start from scratch again. Whereas I think the path you're taking is like, build it up, and then take another big swing from there. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that's very fair in terms of what we're doing. From, you know, a bootstrapper's perspective, I'd say Snappa was pretty successful. And we're kind of, I mean, we could probably get into this, but I think there's a whole discussion about, you know, selling versus keeping and layering on. But it's kind of just how it played out. And so we've obviously taken the option of keeping that existing business running and then using those profits and the cash that we've built up to, you know, launch a new venture and layer on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And just for context, the new venture is Good Metrics, right?
Yeah. So it's at goodmetrics.io. And essentially we're building an alternative to GA4 because I, and what seems to be a lot of other founders and marketers really don't like what Google Analytics has become. And so we're trying to build something that is a lot better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, on one hand, when you say that, I go, well, shouldn't be too hard to build something better. On the other hand, a lot of challenges, I think. And I want to dig into Good Metrics and the challenge and the opportunity you have there. But I think before we do that, I want to focus a little and continue this thread on, which is a pretty cool path. And you actually see it a lot more than we realize, maybe, which is like, get something up here, get it established, and then go do something else. Sometimes with like a productized service or a consultancy. And then you take a swing at a big SaaS. As you're going into Good Metrics, just kind of generally, what things are you taking from your experience at Snappa that you'll do like the same? And what will you do differently?
Yeah. So with Snappa, in terms of the product and business model, there was pros and cons in terms of a lower dollar kind of low switching cost type of product. And so when it comes to paying us, you know, $15 a month and to create a couple images, what we found is it was really easy for us to scale up our acquisition efforts. And we converted very well in terms of signing up to the product, less so much on free to paid, but we grew very nicely for the first 4 years of the product. Like, when we launched, we got to about 4K MRR in about a month. And I think we're at like 20K in a year. And then at its peak, we got up to 1.5 million in ARR. Unfortunately, we're doing less than that now. It's been a tough couple of years. But the downside of that was churn was just always an issue for us. And, you know, it's one of these things you can try a million different tactics or whatever, but when you are a product that people can come in, use, and cancel, and it's a low price point, and you're dealing with more of the prosumers, we didn't really have any expansion revenue. So it's one of those things where it was great in the beginning because we scaled up really well. We focused very heavily on user acquisition, which is kind of what I would say, you know, I'm good at on the marketing side of things. But then you get SaaS envy with anyone who has expansion revenue and lower churn. But on the flip side with those people, they might be saying the same thing of like, oh, it's so much harder for us to acquire customers. But having been in the Snappa seat, I think from like building a calm type B2B long-term business, I think I would rather have expansion revenue and lower churn versus, you know, just constantly on this like acquisition treadmill. So I would say that's one of the things I'm probably most looking forward to with good metrics is just right out of the gate, I think having a better business and pricing model from like a long-term perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. I can relate in some respects, right? Castos is probably kind of similar to Snappa, right? We start at $19 a month, almost no expansion revenue, but very low churn.
Yeah.
Our net revenue churn in the last few months has been less than 1%, which for a creator kind of business is
yeah, that would be awesome. A dream for us.
Well, yeah. And I know others in our industry have like 9% churn, like a direct competitors of ours.
Yeah.
And so that goes contrary to something that I kind of say, which is like, this is just the opportunity. Like you are what you are. There's no sense in trying to fight it. I don't know. Do you agree with that? Like, do you think there's a world where Snappa could be a very low churn business? And I mean, you have a lot of skills, like, but y'all just aren't able to make it work, or is there something else about like how an opportunity in a business is constructed that gives it these characteristics? And then like, you just can't change it, like how you acquire customers or your price point that attracts these certain types of people that have those characteristics of churn or not. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would say, in terms of what Snappa is right now and kind of the path that we went down, I would say, I mean, maybe this is cope, but I think if you hired like the best user retention expert in the world, I feel like they would have a very hard time like truly getting our churn down. The way to do it would be to go upmarket and more enterprise, which is essentially what Canva's done, which is like the biggest competitor in the space. Because once you're dealing with like huge teams and organizations, you know, then you're charging per seat. There's some expansion revenue baked in. And I would imagine the churn on those like enterprise customers are probably like, you know, insanely low much lower compared to the prosumer. But, you know, in order for us to do that, we would have had to, you know, either raise a bunch of money or go unprofitably and hire a big team. And it's just not something we want to do. So like, to your point, I very much agree in that, you know, initially we were like, okay, you know, should we get this churn down and this and that? And I think it was, something I read from like Heaton Shaw, and essentially it was like, you know, sometimes your business model is what it is. And if you're really in an acquisition game, just triple down on acquisition. And that's kind of what we did, rather than like, you know, dwelling too much on like, oh, our churn's a lot higher. Because again, you know, at the time, like I knew a lot of people that had SaaS businesses with like expansion revenue and lower churn. And we grew like way, way faster than they did to get to a million ARR. But like I said, the catch with that is they're now maintaining their million ARR, where like we've had trouble doing that.
Yeah.
But like at the end of the day, you know, we've generated, I think, close to like $8 million in like total revenue since we launched Snappa. So I'm not going to like,
amazing,
you know, be too upset that like we stumbled into this like higher churn business, because there was an opportunity. We captured that opportunity. We were successful in that period of time, and it was life changing in a sense that like we now have like a very, very long runway to kind of, you know, figure out the next thing.
Yeah. No, I love it. And I'll just kind of add one thing, which is something that folks from our team tell me, and it's funny that they have to like console me, which is, building $1 million self-service bootstrapped SaaS business is an amazing feat. And I would just like not discount that to anyone. Cause I, you and I have talked and sometimes like, oh man, fucking, I can't believe this or I can't believe that. Mm-hmm. But like, you've done an amazing thing and it's still there and you have it to like then launch yourself into this new thing. And I know you've done several other things in the past couple of years, but like to everyone, I would just say like, if you can do that, that's amazing. And it gives you so many options. You can sell it and take time and start something new or not and put it on autopilot and go start something new. And either one of those are awesome. So
I remember, I remember when we first started and I was thinking to myself like, man, if we can make 20K MRR, we're set for life, this would be like unbelievable. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, every time you hit a milestone, you're looking at the next one. The last 2 years have been very difficult just because we've been in this like slow, painful decline from the top of COVID. But again, it's like, sometimes you just have to remind yourself, like there's not a lot of people who like 100% bootstrap a business and hit a million ARR. So I've been trying to focus more on that than like dwelling on, you know, all the mistakes and what have you.
Cool. Okay. So let's switch gears to, I want to hear about like the decision-making process of like evaluating new opportunities. Cause imagine you've been on the lookout and evaluating new products to build for a while. Walk us through like what that looked like and the things you considered when coming up with what eventually was good metrics.
Yeah. So at a high level, we had some criteria, one of which being, at least from a SaaS, I think SaaS has gotten very competitive and difficult. And building Snap on myself, I know just how hard it is. So we really didn't want to launch a new SaaS business unless we had some degree of confidence that it would succeed. And we also, at a bare minimum, wanted it to be like a bigger business than Snap. But we didn't want to launch something like too kind of niche that didn't have that like, you know, longer term potential to be, again, another seven-figure SaaS business. We kind of touched on this already, but like really wanted something with expansion revenue and lower churn. And so I think good metrics would definitely fit into that because there's obviously you can charge more as people's sites grow and, analytics product, like people just don't uninstall them very regularly. Once you've got it tracking and you're comfortable using that, you're going to stay on. And then I think the other thing is, I've always had this opinion that, scratching your own itch and being able to dog food your own product, if possible, is fantastic. Like even with Snap, especially over the last few years, like I wasn't the one going in there and like using my own product. And, you know, I'm not really big on social media. So even like trying to, you know, stay up to date with like what's the latest craze in social media these days. And so good metrics, I found that like it just really aligned with a pain point that I had. And I did a bunch, and we can dig into this too, like digging into doing some customer discovery calls. I mean, just type GA4 into Twitter and see how many people are complaining about it. To me is like a huge signal. And it's funny, there was one tweet in particular. I don't know if you know Benji from Grow and Convert. He had a tweet that said, Google can make a lot of money if they just charged $50 to $100 for universal analytics. And everyone was just piling in the comments being like, would totally pay to go back, would totally pay for this, would totally pay for this. And that's kind of when I think that tweet in particular is really when the light bulb went off because, I just had such a hard time using GA4. And at first I wasn't sure if it was just me being an idiot or, if other people had the same pain point. And so once I, at least in my head, determined that I think a lot of people would pay for this, I think it really aligns with our skill sets in terms of our development team and what I think I can do as a marketer. I have a lot of people in my network who this product could be very useful for. So just kind of stacking the deck in terms of getting some confidence, just because I know how hard a SaaS product is. So wanted some level of like assurance that, and again, there's no guarantees that we'll be successful, but just not going into it blindly.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it. Let's touch on pricing because I think that's probably one of the biggest kind of lever, like the pricing and business model, because I think it's one of the biggest levers or differences. They're both on the surface, they have some similarities, right? And with Castus, like self-serve, horizontal, right? A bunch of different type of people will use this tool. Relatively low price point, like not enterprise, right? So self-serve, but pricing seems to be the big differentiator where you think like pricing this will allow for expansion revenue and probably like a decent entry point. I would suppose, like, are you guys planning on charging like $50 a month or something like that for this?
Yeah, so we obviously haven't like nailed down the exact pricing yet, but I would think that like, we would have a very low tier with people with, let's call it 10K page views a month or something like that, that we would charge, $19, $29 a month. I would expect
Okay.
most people would probably, come in under like the 100K per month page views, which, maybe that's like $49 a month, and then, scale up to the, hundreds of dollars per month kind of thing for like the big sites that are doing millions and in page
Yeah.
views. So that's kind of what I'm thinking off the top of my head in terms of pricing and doing a bit of research in terms of like what some other competitors in the space are doing price wise.
Yeah, gotcha. So the value metric is page views, and that's what you bill on. So like email subscribers for an ESP.
Yeah, it would be a combination of page views and events. So obviously you'll be page view is essentially would be considered an event, and then anything custom that you'd want to track, like signups and
Starts a
upgrades,
trial,
convert.
opts into email, clicks a button.
Yeah, exactly. So those would all be events, but really page views is kind of what like dominates, I feel like.
I think just the one other thing to point out, and like I think we see the pretty much the good side of this, but like being business critical, I think is really a really important thing. If I was designing like the perfect SaaS, and of course like Jason Cohen's MicroConf talk is like legendary around this, like I want to be as business critical as possible. I think you definitely tick that box. I think Castos kind of does, kind of doesn't. Like you can't just. And I think this is the other important one. You can't just quit it because you're not creating new content, right? Like if your website is up, you need analytics. If your podcast, if you want to keep it alive, you need podcast hosting. I can imagine a place that you suffered with Snappa was like, hey, if I'm not publishing new shit on social, I don't need social media images.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
But
and you would
like a
have
social
people
media
coming.
analytics tool, you would still need.
Yeah, and you would have people coming in doing like, a bulk, like they would sign up for a month, they would just like hold bulk images or whatever, then they would cancel, and then maybe they'd come back like 4 months later to like do another bulk. And so yeah, this is like you said, with analytics is like as long as your site's up and running, like you're not going to cancel.
Got it. Cool. Let's talk about naming. 'Cause I like the name, right? I like the name. I'm assuming goodmetrics.com was like, is it available? Is it very expensive? Did you guys look at buying it? Like,
Yeah, it's not available right now. We did the same thing with Snappa. Not sure if it's the right or wrong decision, but we got the snappa.io, and then eventually we paid, I think it was like 40 grand for the .com once it warranted. So that's kind of our thinking on good metrics as well, is prove it out, like actually make some money, and then when necessary, we'll bite the bullet and get a .com.
Cool. So we're recording this middle of February. Kind of where are y'all today? I know there's a page up. I signed up for early access. Like what's the status now and what's the plan for the next kind of few months?
Yeah, so right now we've got just like a basic landing page outlining why we're building the product, a screenshot of kind of essentially what the dashboard, at least the home page of the dashboard will look like, and so people can sign up for a wait list. We're already building the product. Essentially, on the development side, we figured out all the scripting and data capture. We actually have that running on Snappa, and that's working really well. And then the next step is basically designing all the reporting and queries and all that good stuff. So I've known in software never to give ETAs, but this we're definitely like several months away from launching like a commercially viable product. But I would love to get something out within like a 6 month time frame at the most.
Love it. Love it. What, from like a customer acquisition perspective, like a lot has changed since you started Snappa? And like for me, like if I was to start another SaaS business today, I probably wouldn't run the same playbook as I did with Castos. Like, how are you, without giving away like the secret sauce, but like, how are you conceptually thinking about customer acquisition in 2024 with fucking AI and everything? Like, what's the general kind of feel?
Yeah. So, I really like using like a two-pronged approach where you focus, at least one short-term channel and one long-term channel. Snappa and pretty much every business we built up to this point has mainly been, content marketing and SEO. As you alluded to, that has gotten insanely competitive and crowded. So I'm like tempering my expectations on how much we'll get out of that, like right out of the gate. But I still think that it's still a very good long-term marketing channel. I don't know if you've read Nathan Barry's post on like direct sales, in terms of how he got ConvertKit off the ground. So that's definitely something that I plan to do in the beginning, especially for an analytics product where we don't really want to just open up the floodgates in terms of, you know, scaling issues and all that kind of stuff. So I literally have like a spreadsheet of 100 people in my network. You're on that spreadsheet, by the way, as you know.
Awesome.
That basically I think would be a pretty good fit for this kind of product. Many of those people I've already had conversations with. So my plan is like out of the gate, very manual, very high touch, like your cliche things that don't scale. And then another thing that we have working in our favor is that we still have this SaaS product called Snappa, which is still getting, you know, 5,000 people signing up every week to create graphics. And I would like to think that a large percentage of those have a website, and some of those may need analytics. So I'm tempering my expectations because I've heard a lot of people downplay the effectiveness of like cross-selling and cross-promotion. But you know, there's still like 20,000 people a month that are signing up for Snappa. And so even adding good metrics somewhere in an onboarding sequence or, you know, in our, you know, our marketing, I think that will go some way. So those are kind of some things that I'm thinking about and kind of growing from the start. And then you have things like, you know, integrations, you know, affiliates, and then you can run the whole gamut of like 20 different marketing channels. But I think that's kind of what we'll focus on in the beginning.
Yeah. I love it. I can imagine, and I'm sure you've thought of this, like consultants, like SEO consultants and paid acquisition folks would be a solid place. So you sell one of them, it's like a channel partnership, but you sell one of them and then they have all their customers sign up for it. That's interesting. Sorry, I'm going to backtrack a little bit to like validation, because like we touched on a little bit, but all we talked about was like, oh, I think it's a good idea. And folks on Twitter said it would be a good idea. But like, you did customer interviews. Tell me about how that went. Like, you and I had a conversation. You had a conversation with Andy Baldacci. I'm sure, like, tell me about how that went. Like, did you read the mom test? How sure are you that like your friends didn't lie to you?
Yeah. I think one of the best books on this is Lean Customer Development. And the biggest takeaway is like, what you don't want to do is say, hey, I'm building this. Do you think it's a good idea? Like you kind of allude to, if you're just having conversation with your friends, like 99% of them are going to say, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. So during those conversations, what I tried to get at is like, you know, what are you currently doing for analytics? Like what are the specific pain points, that you're having with GA4? What were you doing with universal analytics and why can't you do that with GA4? Mm. You know, what would your ideal analytics product look like? So basically really trying to understand what their pain points are and what they're trying to get out of an analytics product before ever telling them, this is what we're building. This is how we want to do it. You know, this is what it's going to look like. Do you think this is a good idea or would you use this product?
Yeah.
And so the recurring theme that I heard from like almost everybody was that, GA4 has just made it so difficult and complicated to understand conversions and specifically what content on their site is performing well and where those conversions are coming from. And that was like, like literally 99% of people can't figure out what are the pages on my site right now that are actually like driving revenue to the business. And so, you know, after hearing that like 10 times, I'm like, okay, I think if we can solve this main problem, I'm reasonably confident that people would pay to use our product.
Yeah. Coincidentally, we hired a consultant to implement GA4 for us. And 3 months after that, it was done and he showed me around. I said, okay, great, got it. And I have a Looker Studio panel and all this kind of stuff. And then I was like, hey, I want to see this data. And I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. And just like you, I'm like a reasonably smart guy. And so I had to pay this guy like $100 to hop on a call with me to show me like where this report is. And I'm like, the fuck? Like, I think I tweeted about it even. I was like, you know, it's a good sign when there's like software you have to have a consultant to use to go in and disrupt it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's insane. I want to touch on something like, so my first business, Podcast Motor, like, definitely had competitors when we launched and was, you know, heavily inspired by other people. Right. And I think that's like the smartest way to do it. And you are, and then Castos too, right? Fucking Libsyn and Simplecast and all these guys existed. And even like with our WordPress integration, like a direct analogy to what we do existed. We just thought, hey, we can do this better, which is like what I'm hearing. But one thing I'm hearing from you is like, there's definitely a hated competitor in GA4. But then like there are, I'll say like new breed analytics tools out there too, right? Like, how did you think about what is the opportunity for this aside from the big hated incumbent with like these new upstarts, and how can you all compete against them effectively?
Yeah. So most of the upstarts you're probably alluding to have actually been out for several years now. And what they did differently from Google Analytics at the time, which they all came out when there was still Universal Analytics. They came out well before GA4. And their angle has always been privacy. And so if you care about, you know, user privacy, you don't want to use cookies. And then obviously over the past few years, there's all this GDPR regulations that have come out and what have you. And so their angle was, we are the privacy-friendly alternative to Google Analytics. If you care about privacy, you should use our products. And they've all, or most of them have been built very fantastic businesses purely from that angle. Obviously, I'm biased, but what I feel like, and I've actually asked during some of these customer discovery calls, whether or not other people have used these products, and essentially they all kind of fall short around this conversion tracking, because they're, most of them, and some of them are kind of improving this too, so I don't want to make like blanket statements, but they, you know, really what they're focusing on is on the privacy angle. And so essentially we think there's an opportunity to kind of slide in the middle of still being privacy friendly and not using cookie-based tracking, but focusing much more on like actually measuring your conversions and, you know, again, figuring out what pages are actually driving revenue and which sources of traffic are driving revenue to your business, as opposed to just use us because we're privacy friendly and Google is evil. And so gotcha. I think that's where we're going to kind of slide in terms of differentiation.
Yeah, makes sense. And I hear you on marketing. I think that, yeah, like the content marketing and SEO playbook can definitely still work. Like, we're still investing, you know, pretty heavily in it. And I think it's still like a solid place to come from. One thing we found with like the Podcast Motor and Castos dynamic was you can build links from one to the other. Mm-hmm. Like that's pretty effective. We saw pretty solid cross sell. I mean, it's the exact same audience.
Yeah.
You know, so, but like you have a subset, I think, with Snappa that is the exact same audience. Like you said, everyone has a website, whether they need analytics or not. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What else did you consider? Like it sounded when you were describing the opportunity and how you evaluated this, you're like, oh, SaaS is like fucking hard and it takes a long time to build it. But once you get it going, it's great. And that's where we are, is like Castos is a great business in a lot of ways. It's like it's going and it's a machine and we have people come and sign up and they do and they get value and it's all great. But it's the first 5 years that's so hard.
Yeah.
Did you guys look at I mean, even offline opportunities or not SaaS or any, because I think that like it's not the only way to make business or to make money.
Yeah. So we actually did launch some like, I would call, almost call them more of like side projects along the way.
Okay.
So one of them was a Bitcoin dashboard, bitbo.io, which we actually ended up selling for multiple six figures. So it was pretty sweet outcome in terms of like what was required to like build it. But you know, wasn't like life changing and like sunset money, as Rob Walling likes to say. And, but the, you know, the thing with that was like, I think it took, you know, Mark built it in like a month maybe. And then we just kind of put it out there and it just kind of took off. So, there was very like minimal effort in terms of like grinding and, you know, build. So I didn't look at that the same way as something like Goodmetrics, where like, this is going to be at least 6 months to build. And this is going to be like several years of like, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to get this thing off the ground.
Yeah.
Another side project we launched was like a daily golf newsletter. When, you know, newsletters were all the rage, which we ended up like shutting down to kind of, focus on Goodmetrics. So, you know, there's kind of little things that we evaluated, but nothing, again, there wasn't anything that we felt confident enough in terms of the opportunity to like really devote a lot of time and energy to like actually pursue in a meaningful way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing that I think we've kind of hinted at, but want to be really like clear about it for me, like in designing the perfect SaaS business, I think you're ticking a lot of the boxes, but one we haven't touched on is like evergreen demand, right? Mm-hmm. Like you touched on like everyone with a website is going to need this, but like, also what you're saying is like websites just aren't going away.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I worry about with Castos. Not that like we don't really have platform risk. We don't have integration risk. We kind of have like genre risk, I guess, which is like podcasting just becomes less popular. People stop podcasting because they go to fucking blogging or YouTube or something like that. Like I think that's about the only big risk we have. I don't see that with this opportunity for you all. Like people are going to have websites, you know, yeah. And they're going to need metrics on it. Maybe something like a GDPR could come in and just change how y'all collect data. But I like this a lot, just like I like help desks or CRMs or ESPs where like people are, as long as there's business, people are going to be doing these things.
Yeah.
So I think that's just worth stating for folks who are going through the same kind of mental exercise of like, is there a possibility that fucking AI comes in and just destroys your whole category of business. Here I'd say probably not, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because AI was actually one of the major things that we were considering as well, because I think it's only a matter of time in terms of Snap. I mean, we're already there. You're already seeing a whole bunch of tools where you can type in a prompt and an image is generated. Now it's not there yet, but it will be there. Like within the next 5 years, I think these generative AI tools will probably be good enough where you can like literally type anything and it could design what you would have had to do manually in Snappa. And so that was definitely one of the things that was very appealing to us with Goodmetrics is like AI is not going to be able to like install a script and, you know, store all this information in a database and feed you all these reports. And so that was very attractive.
Know like, which events to trigger and
Like we basically want to play in a space that is a big enough opportunity for a bootstrapper, but not big enough for like big VC competitors to come in. And I think this kind of fits that goal.
Yeah. I'm gonna challenge you on one thing. I sent a tweet about this after listening to an episode of Built to Sell. It's a really, really great podcast, John Warlow. And he had a guy from private equity on, and the guy was saying, hey, our thesis is we buy vertical SaaS businesses and then, you know, fucking run them and cash flow and all this kind of stuff. This is definitely not vertical, right? Just like Castos is not vertical. We get a lot of shit about it. Hey, you got to niche down. You got to be podcast hosting for churches or whatever.
Yeah.
Like what's your retort to that to say like, hey, a horizontal business can be really powerful. I've done it before. Mm-hmm. This is just the difference in how you do it.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think business is hard because there's never a right answer for every person who tells you like vertical SaaS is like what you have to do, there's going to be a bunch of people that have built horizontal SaaS businesses. I'm sure private equity probably isn't going to look at Snappa as like the most successful business in the world, but like we were horizontal and, you know, it worked to the level that it did. One thing that is interesting though, that I have thought about is I suspect that Goodmetric, even though, especially from day one, we're not planning to be, you know, analytics for X or analytics for e-commerce, but something tells me that the problem that we're solving for seems to really resonate with people that have either content sites on their own or a business that heavily depends on content marketing and SEO. So my gut tells me that even though, and who knows, maybe down the road, we will be the marketing solution for content sites. I'm not going to like, you know, shut down that possibility. But I think like you can still be horizontal and maybe have like, you know, there's creative things you can do. Like you can have solution pages, right? So you can create pages on your site where you're ranking for like analytics for e-commerce businesses. And then you specifically spell out if you have an e-commerce business, like these are the reports that are going to be very attractive to you if you have a content business or a SaaS business. So I think there's ways that you can still have like a quote unquote, like horizontal SaaS business, but still, you know, sell it as a vertical solution in a way. I don't know if that answers your question at all.
No, it does. It does. And I largely think of it as the same way. Like it's on my marketing to-do list. Like we have the use cases, you know, or kind of vertical pages that we just haven't built yet. But yeah, podcast hosting for churches, podcast hosting for nonprofits, podcast hosting for whatever, or even like from an SEO perspective, how to start a podcast for X, you know, like that's like an option. I agree. I tend to think that you all, especially at the beginning, will niche yourselves down probably around like your existing audience and stuff. Like you and I are talking, we'll probably become customers. So like SaaS might be it. You might find it in e-commerce and that just takes off. It might be from channel partners. Like you get a bunch of e-commerce marketing agencies on board and they decide they can do their job so much easier. Yeah. And then you can kind of verticalize from there. I think that's reasonable. Yeah. I indirectly get shit about being a horizontal tool. And it is harder. I think that like, you know, one of the things that Rob actually said on Twitter was that like it's pricing power and it's churn typically that like being a vertical tool solves. And I think it goes back to like mission criticality, right? Is like, if you're, you know, website builder for gyms, like fucking the gym has to have your thing. And so they'll pay $200 a month, right? It's just like, and they're never going to leave. I think that like what horizontal brings in are more kind of amateurs a lot of times. And you talked about it with Canva, right? Canva probably saw that. And then they're like, shit, we got to go up market to just build a bunch of different verticals, probably is what they did, right? With their sales process.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. What, like, what are you most worried about with this? Because I can tell you've like given it a lot of thought, really smart guy. You're approaching this, I think, like in the right way. But like, as you're like getting ready to launch in the next few months, what are you like, shit, like we got to get over this hump?
Yeah. So the thing I'm most worried about is for the same reason that I think this is a very attractive long-term business opportunity. I think it's going to be a grind in the beginning because again, with low churn, right? If you have a product that's very low churn, what that means is you have to fight to get that person to cancel their existing product, right? In order to use your solution. So for us, really what it's going to come down to is like, just how painful is this problem for people that have GA4? And you know, if they're going to do the legwork to actually like install the script and start using our tool instead of GA4. And then the other thing is like, we're in some sense, we're competing with free, right? Like GA4 is free. And so, again, how valuable is it to like actually be able to, you know, properly track conversions and figuring out what's driving revenues. Now, I would like to argue that that is worth $50 a month to a business if it can generate them, you know, many multiples on that revenue. So yeah, in terms of what I'm most worried about is just like, how much of a grind is it going to be, especially in the beginning, to just like, you know, I'm imagining there's going to be a lot of calls and handholding and try to, you know, push people over the edge. But like I said, for those same reasons, I like it as a long-term opportunity if we can kind of, you know, jump that hurdle in the beginning.
Okay, Christopher, folks who want to follow along and see kind of how this all evolves and check out GoodMetrics, where is the best place to go and stay in touch with you?
Yeah, so just head to goodmetrics.io, put your email and sign up for the waitlist. And then you can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @cgimmer.
Awesome. Cool, buddy. Thanks for coming on and good luck. We'll have you back on in 6 months for like an update, and I want to hear how it's going.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right.